This is CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Yes, here we are. Are you ready to get cracking this morning with an important, thoughtful, useful, interesting discussion? Huh? Are you? Well, punk, are you?
Okay, then.
It's like half Clint Eastwood, half Ruby Wax. I didn't even know. Good morning. What's happening? What's going down? I'm already ready to just post-winter off to another dimension.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, oh, happy Mandela Day, by the way.
It's yay.
The 18th of July. Yeah, it's a big day. It's important. He would have been 100 years old today.
Big day.
Well, we'll get into the Mandela lecture in a minute or two, because both Sia and I were there, and there were a lot of people there, much more important than us. I thought I had shitty seats, but then I realized, like, the who's who was there. I was lucky to even have a seat. No, really. We'll talk about that in a minute or two. Lots of cool stuff to get to. Good morning, Ben. Good morning, Sia. Good morning, Nolo. Good morning to you, and especially to you. So, Madiba would have been 100 today.
Isn't that something?
It is something. I think it's incredible. I mean, you know, it's a pity he didn't make it to 100, because you always want people to be around for their 100th birthday. It's a massive milestone, and these days we can live to 100. But, I mean, the guy survived, considering what he'd gone through in his life. He survived to 94, 95, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I mean, he died in 2013, so it must have been 94.
It was kind of kind of a large chunk of his life where it wasn't conducive to living for a long age.
No, and remember, like, what he had to put up with in terms of working in a quarry and getting prison food and, you know, not necessarily having access to the amenities that you would need if you wanted to live a healthy, successful life for 100 years. But he did well. He was made of strong stuff. And obviously today a lot of people all over South Africa will be doing their bit for Mandela Day, which is, you know, you don't have to be ideological. And someone said to me the other day, oh, I don't agree with this idea of X, Y, and Z. And I said to them, you know, the thing about Mandela Day is it's not really an ideological thing. A lot of people want to help, and there's no, you're not forced at gunpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to do something for someone else. I think it's a great excuse. There is nothing about that that is questionable. You can interrogate anything based on its ideological principles, and you can say, well, I disagree with this or I disagree with that. The fact is, though, some stuff is not really about your thoughts and your ideas and your opinions. It's really about how much you can put in or how much you don't want to put in. And if you don't want to put in, just stay out. That's all. You don't have to ruin it for everybody else. And if you are doing something today, I salute you. Just because it comes from the best place that humans can possibly come from, not being selfish. Right?
Yep, that's a change.
That would be so nice to see more of, because everybody's in survival mode half the time. They're just doing what they can for themselves. It would be really nice if you did more of this stuff, and if I did more of this stuff, and if we all just did more of this stuff. So I'm not going to preach endlessly about this, but it was really interesting to hear some of the speeches yesterday around what Mandela's life was and, you know, what kind of man he was. And Graca Machel spoke at length, I have to say. I didn't know she was such a windbag.
I did not think she was going to go on for that long.
Oh, but she spoke and
like
spoke.
Okay, Mama Graca,
like, Jesus. I suddenly realized why they didn't let her talk at all these events before. She was on a roll.
She was passionate. She was fueled by the occasion. Let's
Holy
put it that way.
Shit. Couldn't shut her up. I think, doesn't this woman get tired?
It was a great occasion, though. I thought it was.
No, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. All right, so lots of things to get into there, and if you are doing something for Mandela Day today, good for you. Where do we begin? Well, Sia, you were there. First of all, did you get into the stadium in time? Because there was quite a lot of security. There were queues everywhere. I thought it was processed pretty well, though. You know, I've been to a number of events where you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait.
Mm.
And this one was quick.
And we had heard so many reports. I was freaking out slightly because they had said these roads will be closed and that road will be closed. Well. That was very organized as well and very efficient, the flow of traffic, firstly. And then
Why didn't he just arrive in the Protea Fire bus?
What do you mean?
Well, that's the wonder is they process cricket events all the time.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Buying them in the bus, it's protocol. They know which they just close off a bit
Protea
of call
Fire
it.
Bus.
Close off a bit of
corners. Imagine.
You get the right kind of West African car guards in a certain section of Ilova, and then it'll happen.
And you call
so
it
quickly.
A day. Yeah, not exactly happening.
Well, it's all over.
How poncy is this guy to think he's above the Protea Fire?
Yeah. I don't think he did. Listen, if there.
Outrageous.
Listen, this was a major event worldwide.
So many people were there.
I saw Sky News covering it this morning early, CNN. I saw a number of international publications and distributors picking up on the content, so it was a big deal.
I thought we were going to be locked out, because what time did you arrive?
I was sitting down, ready to go, an hour before.
An hour before the official
An hour before
started.
Everything started. An hour before everyone came on stage.
Oh, okay. Because we were...
But they started on time. I love this. You know, I have such respect and admiration for people who can keep time. They started on time.
Mm.
They said they'd start at 2 o'clock. They started at 2 o'clock sharp.
Yeah, so that means we were still outside at 2 o'clock. Because we could hear the applause from outside the stadium when everyone walked onto stage. That's how loud it was, firstly.
Who were you?
But secondly,
who were you hanging around
with? I went with Celeste, who works here at Cliff Central.
Okay.
So she and I made our way in there, and we were in one of the suites. So...
I was sitting up with the plebs, and I was very happy, thank you very much.
Sorry, I am not accustomed to the cold. So we were in one of the suites, and it was really great. The speeches that were made, and this is not even Obama, but Sello Hatang, who's been here a couple of times, and he's the head of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. Mm-hmm. The young lady who hosted as well, her name has popped out of my head.
Busi, yeah, I can't remember.
But I just thought...
I don't know who she was, but she was pretty good, too.
But exactly what I said yesterday. I'm such a cornball when it comes to these things. Just to hear the national anthem sung by the Soweto Gospel Choir, to have Obama, and of course he dropped the word hope in there so many times,
uh-huh.
to have everyone
the crowd
banded
when,
in there.
When he started speaking, they all started going, yes, we can.
That took me back to 2008, and I was right there chanting with them.
Listen, before we get into Obamaphoria,
mm-hmm.
which is...
and Ramaphoria.
There was a lot of Ramaphoria, funnily enough. I thought, people, why are you cheering Cyril when he hasn't done anything yet? But let's leave that alone.
It's the Ramaphoria.
I know. People are excited. We've got a very low bar for success. Coming out of the
starting
Zoom
on,
administration.
Starting on time and wearing pants. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Wearing pants?
Well, Cyril nails that every time. I mean, what else have we got
no,
to
No, but
really
you know what?
Here?
Here's what I thought one of the most interesting things that was said was Jabulo Ndebele at the beginning when he said, we've just come out of 10 years of depredation. And I thought that was a very bold comment to make, because it's the first time I've heard anyone acknowledge just how dangerous the last 10 years have been for South Africa and for democracy. And while it would have been welcome 5 years ago, to some people it may be too little, too late, I think the admission that the last 10 years were terrible is the very least that an NGO like the Nelson Mandela Foundation, that holds his legacy high, can do. It's the least they can do to acknowledge that, and I think a lot of people were relieved to hear it, because if we don't acknowledge how badly we've gone wrong, we cannot start to fix things. And the fact that he came up right at the beginning, before everybody else, and said that, was very, very important. Quite seminal, and I think set the tone for the whole thing. There were a lot of interesting things discussed. I don't know if we want to get into the content of the speech, because you're going to be seeing it over and over again. We'll play you little clips just now, get you in on that. It's a major world event. Mm. It was also billed as, and I was sitting next to a couple of interesting people who said to me, this is going to be the speech where Trump is finally criticized by Obama, which I don't think he did.
Well, it wouldn't have been the place for it.
Certainly not in an overt way, but it's also not his style. Mm. He's been very good about staying mostly out of this. And you know, the point is, and this was pointed out to me by someone else who's much cleverer than me, that Obama didn't see Trump coming at the end of his term. Nobody did. Nobody could see this phenomenon that had grown up in rural and middle and even parts of the coast of America. They didn't see it, and he kind of acknowledged, like they were blind to this.
But what does it say about Obama's tenure, essentially? Because overseas, of course, everyone loves him because he's the greatest president in the world. Everybody wants him. But clearly Americans were quite disgruntled if they wanted something as different as Donald.
I think a bunch of different people came out to vote than had ever come out before, first of all. And I think that
But why weren't they voting for Barack earlier?
Look, Obama's legacy is a mixed thing, and we're still too close to it to be able to identify whether it was mostly positive, mostly negative, or somewhere in the middle. And you're going to meet people who are very much already decided based on nothing but their own opinions, which is usually what people do, right? But you need a couple of years. I mean, for example, Nixon, who was president in the late 60s, early 70s, only now are we coming to grips with Nixon's legacy. And this is some time after. What we mustn't forget is that even though technology and the spread of information and the ability to reach each other instantaneously has happened, there are still some things that we need to digest. There are still some things that we need to be able to figure out in the long term. And one of those things is how good or bad a president is. When it's as complicated as the American system is, you know, you can see that Jacob Zuma was a bad president. You can see that, you know, Nazarbayev in Kazakhstan is a bad president. Because it's patently obvious that his people are suffering and that in South Africa our economy is broken. But it's not so in America. You have to be a lot more nuanced in your approach, and I think that there's a lot that we still have to work out about the Obama presidency. But whether or not you like the guy, and I think there's a lot of what happened with Mandela where people are reviewing him and saying, oh, he didn't do enough and blah, blah, blah. A lot of that's happening with Obama now. And I don't know that all of it is fair, and I'm certainly not one of those people who is an acolyte of his. I liked the guy. I thought he was a class act. Like, he came onto that stage yesterday again, and I thought, this guy's a... He's just got that... And a lot of people think it's fake, but he's got that panache. He's got that ability to work a crowd.
You are using words today that I have to Google, acolyte and panache.
Don't you think he has a...
I often use the word panache on the show.
Don't you think he's got... He's got a feel to him. Like, he's just, there's something, some people may consider it synthetic. I don't. I think there's something about him that's very, it's attractive. It's attractive. It's like what we could be if we're trying to be our best a lot of the time. And I'm by no means trying to say that he's superhuman. You know that.
I think it's because he's got a measured way about him.
Yeah,
from someone who doesn't really care and doesn't believe in politics, he's got a measured way about him that would suggest that he's quite conscientious. Like, he does give things thought. He does have a mind to him.
They kept showing his face while everybody else was complimenting him, including Cyril. You know, Grasse is saying nice things about him. Jabula and Ndebele is saying nice things about him. Patrice is saying nice things about him. By the way, that's the longest time I've ever heard Patrice speak for.
I thought that too. We've never really heard you speak in this manner.
Obama gets so uncomfortable when you compliment him, which I love, because to me that's the sign of someone who's got some humility, you know? I've always considered him to be a guy with the right kind of humility. Because there's humility where you're humble because you've got nothing to be proud of. That's not humility. That's just reality. And then you've got humility where, you know, this guy came out of, he was born in Hawaii, born to a very ordinary family. Mother and father split up. Dad was from Kenya, mom an American. He had a tough childhood, didn't have a lot of money. Mostly his grandparents were involved. You got to read the story. And everybody's story is complicated. And his is not a sad, woe is me story at all. He went to university, he studied hard, he did a law degree. Ended up in academia for a while, was an activist, really working in the most shitty of circumstances. I mean, there's no glamour in being an activist. There's no like kudos on a shelf waiting for people who are out there in the community doing activism. That's a horrible, hard job. He did it. He miraculously got voted in as senator for Illinois. And then after being senator, he decided to run for president. That was a ballsy move. first black president. You know, America, you could say a lot of things about America, but they weren't necessarily going to welcome him with open arms as the first black president. I'm talking about the general population. I'm talking about average people. It's a bit of a, you know, when you've had 200 years of old white men, it's a bit of a thing to take on a younger black man. And America did, and to their credit, I think largely because things have moved so far in so many years, it wasn't a shock, it was a welcome thing. And then you've got this incredible two-term presidency, which is always difficult to do, because if you do it in your first term, first 4 years, and they decide they hate you, they'll vote you out. You're gone. It's really hard to get a second term as president. You have to almost work your first term is almost like your audition, and then in your second term you get to do what you want to do. He did that. He got into his second term. Of course, like any president, he made mistakes. You know, look at the legacy of George W. Bush. Look at the legacy of Bill Clinton, for heaven's sake. We were talking about him just the other day. Obama went around, a lot of what he did, people say, was hot air and, you know, this idea of virtue signaling and of being this statesman with very little substance. I don't know. I think there was a lot that he did that I really liked, and there was a lot about him that he represented that for me was good for humanity. And listening to him speak yesterday again reminded me of those things. He's still got it. He's still got that. He's a special kind of person. And there are special kind of people among us. There are people among us who can do a little bit more than the average person can. And he's one of them. I really think that he's brought about a change in history. In not as big a way maybe as Nelson Mandela, because Mandela's legacy is a world legacy, and it's a legacy that outspans his life or his term as president or anything else. But this Obama is something to see on stage. He's an orator par excellence.
Preach.
The guy, and he was not looking for praise. He said a lot of things in that speech yesterday that are not going to be popular with his base. He said things that run directly against identity politics, that run directly against intersectionality. He doesn't like that anymore. He's turning his back on it. Thought that was very, very important. That's the stuff we've been talking about for 4 years, how this identity politics trap is going to get the left into a place they can't get out of.
But also, as you say, it takes a lot to change your opinion about something, because it shows that you're willing to learn and adapt.
Right. And maybe I'm just biased because he also spoke about history. You know, he went all the way back to 1918 and he sketched a picture of the world.
I like that.
You did? You liked that, huh? Well, then I wasn't the only one.
Well, to paint. He truly painted.
I saw most of the audience sleeping during that part. But I thought it was fascinating because he looked at the world in 1918 when Madiba was born, and he looked at the world now where we are, and particularly over the last 20 years.
And just how much change we've come through.
And this is what I was talking about to someone the other day. They said to me, the world is in a terrible state. I said to them, are you insane? This is the best time to be alive. I keep drumming this into people who don't understand that everything is better. There are less nuclear warheads than there ever were. In the 1980s, we had something like 70,000 warheads. We've now got 20,000. It's still too many. But it's being decimated. The number of countries at open war with each other is like no time in human history. Infant mortality rates are down. Education is up. The average income, even for very, very poor people, is up. Just yesterday we had John Sinai in here, and I said to him, there was an article that was published while we were talking. I just read the headline to him. I read the rest of it when I got home last night. About how every minute, 70 Indian people come out of poverty. Every minute. 70 people in India come out of poverty. Just think about what that means. That was impossible. Under any Mughal emperor in the past, was that possible? Not a chance. You think about how the internet has changed things. You think about how access to information has changed things. The world is a wonderful place. And if you look at the arc of human interactions with each other and the way that we behaved, and how things have developed over 100 years since Madiba was born. The world is unrecognizable. Women didn't even have the vote in most of the world. There were only 9 democracies. 9 in the whole world in 1918. There are now over 90. And that number's growing. Don't tell me the world isn't getting better. And when people complain, well, democracy's imperfect, or there are moves backwards here and there are moves forwards there, and of course, it's an imperfect system because humans.
One of the things that Obama said that I thought was interesting, probably anything I saw in his speech, was that social media has now become a place of hatred and paranoia rather than sharing good ideas. Mm. So to your point, Gareth, people think all of these things because their only reference is all the hate being spewed out on social media about how shit everything is and how shit everyone is.
Well, yeah, and I thought that was extra ironic because this is the first president to have used social media to campaign his way to the White House. So he knew the power of it in the beginning, and he used it, I think, for a positive purpose. But it has. He acknowledged that it's become this cesspit. And I don't think it's fair to say that's true for all social media. It's certainly true for Twitter, and it's certainly true for Twitter in this country. And it's certainly true for ideological spaces on the internet, whether that's Tumblr or, you know, BuzzFeed or any of those kinds of places. But I don't think it's entirely true for, you know, people sharing pictures, for people sending each other voice notes, for people doing interesting updates about stories that matter to them that aren't fake news. I think there are a lot of things about the social media world that we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater for. So I agree with you, Ben, and I agree with President Obama, but I think more importantly, like, it's just an opportunity. Here's a guy who's not in office anymore. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really have to be careful what he says. He's not trying to campaign for votes anymore. He's certainly, the only thing he probably has on his agenda is, let's not screw up what legacy I have, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So maybe that's his agenda. But other than that, you can take what he's saying as an interesting moment of taking stock. Like, let's just take stock at where we are as human beings. And the overwhelming emphasis of his discussion was around that we're progressing. Sometimes there are things that look like they are not going in the direction that we want them to go in. But overwhelmingly, the story of humanity is moving forward in a very positive way. And even though there are people all over the world who are corrupt, who are trying to do bad things, and he didn't mention Trump by name, so everybody's got to just stop being hysterical about that, just like they were hysterical about Trump with Putin.
Yeah, people are just assuming there were couple of minutes he spoke
obviously
about.
Obviously, Obama would have preferred if Hillary won. Hillary was his successor in the Democratic Party. He campaigned for her. He didn't see Trump winning. They all underestimated Trump. He made a terrible, terrible, glaring error in terms of his ability to identify what would happen next. But he's not Nostradamus, and neither are you, and neither am I. And nobody can predict what will happen to humanity. And things are cyclical. Like, you can see things are changing now. There's this feeling in the water that the things that have been in place for the last 6-7 years are starting to fall apart. And as a result, the fighting intensifies around ideologies. And Obama's saying, I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm not going to get more intense. I'm going to take stock. I'm going to learn. I'm going to look at what's going on around me. This is what a survivor does. This is what a clever politician does, is he goes, I was wrong about Trump. I got it wrong. I didn't predict the way American people felt at the end of my term. And now I'm going to pay attention to what's going on. And he said some interesting things. Like, he said, you cannot, and I'm paraphrasing him here, but he said, you cannot imagine for a minute that things like racism are dead. You cannot for a moment imagine that things like sexism aren't still going on. But he said, you also can't get into the trap of disqualifying someone from speaking because they're white and male, which is where the intersectionists and the identity politics people come from.
Did he lose half the crowd when he said that?
No, I don't think they were even listening at that point. They were still, you know, a lot of people were high on the Obama
idea. Yes, you would?
Yeah. But for me...
I mean, look, you've got to listen, and I thought it was, that was what I went there for. I went there to learn.
For me, my biggest takeaway was when he spoke about, you know, towards the end, he was concluding, he was giving those points on what we can do as we move on in future. And he spoke about how we should challenge and engage with people whose views we don't, whose views aren't the same as ours. And I thought, actually, right, that's true. Mm-hmm. And he pointed out,
which is the opposite of just stay in your little clique, you know?
He pointed out, think about all the people who you revere and who you think are great, and they probably think the same way as you. And I was like, actually, that's true. And it doesn't mean you have to agree with someone, but rather let's all work together. And right, that's the only way we'll be able to move on. And I thought that was a point we needed to hear as well.
Spot on. All right, so enough about Obama. I don't need to bore you.
Yes, we can.
And you can listen to his speech yourself. There's plenty of places you can find it. But well done to the Nelson Mandela Foundation for hosting him, for bringing him out here. It's the 16th annual lecture.
Started with Bill Clinton.
Oh.
Okay. When he still had moisture in his throat.
I was the first. Yeah, that's right. All right, let's get going. We've got things to talk about. It's time for five things you need to know this morning. You can call us. By the way, listen, Nola was saying to me yesterday, she's not sure if she doesn't know how to use the phones or not, or whether because we haven't had anyone to answer the phones for, 6 months or so, that people have forgotten how to use them. You know how this show works, right?
Oof. It starts with the burp.
Sorry. You are allowed to interrupt any time. We'll put you on in the middle of the news, the sport, in the middle of me and my rants. We'll put you in the middle of Sia's Said by Sia, whatever you want. It's your show. But you have to call us. You have to get back into the habit of calling us, because I hate sitting here and not getting interaction. It drives me up the wall. I feel like I'm talking to the wall. And I know that everybody's got a busy morning and you've got things to do and people to see and places to go. And I love messages. Don't get me wrong. The messages are great, but the screen, it's on my right-hand side, and I sometimes look at it, and I sometimes don't. I'd much rather hear a voice. You know, we're an audio medium. It's nice to hear the person who's got something to say. We can argue with each other. We could laugh with each other, whatever's on your mind. 0861-555-189. It just feels like an echo chamber if it's just me, Ben, Sia, and whoever else is in the studio with us. So.
Is Gord sickly again?
No, Gord is just all over the place. He sent me a message yesterday saying, can he come in on Friday? And I didn't even reply. Oh. I better tell him. Just hang on.
I spoke to him this morning.
You did? What did he say?
We confirmed Friday, yes.
Yes, come in on Friday.
Oh, you literally?
Do it. I'm literally writing to him as we speak.
Oh, God.
Yes, come in on Friday there.
Perfect.
Seems to have gone through. All right, let's get into it. There's lots to talk about. Five things you need to know. First of all, the Gauteng government has been given 60 days to act against Tairani Mahlangu, who you know is responsible for the Life Estimeni disaster. Whether it's just her or a bunch of other people, they've got a move on her. And I've been waiting for this because nobody ever seems to get any blowback from behaving badly in government. Do you remember what happened in Life Estimeni? Do we need
never
to go
forget.
Over this?
No.
Okay.
It was like a different Marikana, really.
Yeah. The government has paid collective damages of almost 160 million rand to the families whose loved ones died as a result of being moved to illegal NGOs in the province. The DA now wants those responsible for the disaster to repay that money. The DA has given the Gauteng government 60 days to take legal action against former MEC of Health Tairani Mahlangu over the Life Estimeni tragedy. The party's Jack Bloom says letters have been sent to Premier David Makura and MEC Gwen Ramakgopa explaining the demands. Bloom says the government's money could have been used for service delivery instead of covering damages for negligence as part of on the part of a few. Yeah, please, don't give up on this, Jack Bloom. This is how people can build a really important career in politics, is by doing something for the people. And this is important. This Tairani Mahlangu she's living her life as if nothing went wrong. There are over 140 people dead because she didn't do her job properly. There is 160 million rand that has been taken out of the fiscus and been given to these families, rightly so, for damages because these people are dead. And of course, money's not going to bring back their loved ones, but it will help in some situations. But I don't see why you and me and everybody else in this country have to foot the bill for Mahlangu's uselessness. So someone has to pay the price. And it, the days of government not being accountable, according to Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday, are over. Well, here's a chance for you to prove it.
Yeah, Cyril's got a lot of chances there. A lot of ball coming to him in a sporting term.
Let's do it, Cyril.
I'm starting to run with something.
And David Makura, you come on. You need to hold on to Gauteng in the 2019 elections. Let's see if you can do it. This is going to be one of those things that they will use that will get people hugely fired up if you don't sort it out. So, there we go. They're coming for you. Motsoaledi, that's Aaron Motsoaledi, the Minister of Health, is concerned by the high number of HIV-infected people. Well, welcome to the party. A survey shows that new infections have declined over the past 5 years, with HIV incidence of 0.48% last year compared to the 2012 infection rate of 0.85%. He says while there is much to celebrate about the reported decrease in new HIV infections, it is still concerning that South Africa is the country with the most people living with HIV. According to the Human Sciences Research Council, South African National HIV Prevalence Incidence and Behavior Survey for 2017, new infections have declined. But Motsoaledi says more work needs to be done. We need more political wings on HIV, especially in provinces where you go to a clinic, you find that it's not accommodative enough for people who are living with HIV. Well, I heard something horrible the other day. I don't know if this is true. I'd love a serious journalist to pick it up and find out whether it is something that we need to pay attention to. I heard that there are no antiretroviral drugs at the moment available in the Northwest. There are none.
Jeez.
And haven't been for some weeks. Now, if that's true, then...
Isn't that kind of catastrophic? Because it's not like you don't have flu medicine. If you miss a retroviral thing...
That's right.
Antiretroviral thing.
Yes. You're back to being infected. Back to having the problems that HIV brings with it, and clearly this is something that should be a very, very big concern. However, I don't see a lot of stories about it, so maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I heard, and it's worth reporting. If you want to investigate this, if you're a journo or you have information or you know somebody, then find out and let me know if it's right or wrong. I'll correct it if I'm wrong.
Yeah, from what I'm seeing, it's some. The last report is from April 2018, and it's some of the clinics don't have.
Apparently, people are ready to cancel MTN after they put up a 200% data bundle price increase. These guys have got some gall, huh? While people have been picketing for data must fall for what seems like an eternity, MTN have U-turned on a decision to lower the price of their WhatsApp data bundles. And the social media streets are not impressed.
Wow.
MTN announced this week they would increase the price of the bundles from 10 Rand to 30 Rand after the initial demand for the cheaper bundle nearly crippled their system. The company took to social media to explain why they'd made the increase in order to keep the 3G lights on. Don't blame the customer because you can't keep the lights on.
It's actually sad.
How do we feel about this? Are we pissed off?
It's sad and funny to see how these big companies are trying to move and evolve, but they really aren't moving and evolving, actually.
Nolo, what do you think of this?
You know, who's say such a thing?
Is anyone here on MTN?
No.
Anyone? No. Okay, well, then we don't care, man. Sorry.
No. Because, over the weekend, did you guys see this? DStv was, because a lot of people were sharing this graphic of comparison between DStv prices and the price of Netflix.
Yes,
right?
I love that. Yeah.
So DStv's way of responding to it was essentially paying some of their people who were part of the stable to hashtag Siabonga DStv. Yeah.
But how great this is paid influencers, right? Paid influencer marketing. Let me tell you something.
It was so sad.
I wouldn't be surprised if Shaka Sisulu's behind this fuck up as well.
No, but it was people who, some of their presenters and the big name producers.
Oh my God. Obviously
people wasn't even paid. They
people
were just
who
forced
on the,
into it.
People
actually,
on the payroll.
Now that I think about it, they were probably forced.
They were probably given the email saying, do this now while if you still like your job.
But do they think that we are so stupid and we can't see through that?
And we'll say, sure, let's carry on paying 900 rands per month.
Well, what other game have they got, Gareth?
I'm ready to cancel.
You said this over and over again. You pay 900 rand a month for sport.
I know, but I don't, and I don't need it.
But that's the thing. That's what. So yeah, you can't compare Netflix to DSTV. DSTV is a sport provider that shows a bit of cuck shows on the side.
Ben, are you being paid by DSTV?
Yes. I'll take that.
Hashtag Siabonga DSTV.
I'll take that last 100 bucks, Siabonga DSTV.
Look at that. Ben did tweet Siabonga DSTV.
Oh, man,
that would make sense.
Shit. All right, look at that.
You take a buffalo and it's thrown to you now.
Now let's wait and see how MTN is going to try to recover from this or move past it.
But again, MTN isn't very... Like Vodacom, again, maybe this is free advertising, but Vodacom seem to now be showing these DSTV tickets, so you can actually watch like a game for 20 Rand through Vodacom.
Yeah.
Why aren't MTN doing something like this?
What, like through DSTV or you bypass?
But I mean, because DSTV wouldn't want exclusivity on this. They would want everyone to sell their stuff now. Yeah. So as Sia was saying, like they want to go into the future, but they're not doing very futuristic things. Mm. And now they're telling you to use a little bit less WhatsApp. I mean, that's like Eskom. Guys, can you use a little bit less of our product?
Right. This is the Eskom
but
model.
More, but pay
right.
more, please.
Exactly.
Use the less, model people more. Shouldn't be following.
Great work, yeah. Well done, DSTV. You're a genius company. You deserve to be around for another 100 years. Crash and burn. These traditional media companies are in such shit. You're watching the dying breaths of the big media businesses. They're dying. I saw that at Kagiso Media. Was it Kagiso? Yeah, Kagiso Media. They fired a whole bunch of the top people the other day. They're all just fired. They're gone.
Fired?
Yeah. Like the CEO and a whole lot of other people. They just fired them because they cannot find new ways to generate business, and they're messing around, wasting money in places that they don't understand, like digital, like gaming, things like that. Don't understand it. Because they've got old-school media people in charge of new digital assets. Don't know how to do it. It's madness. It's like letting your granddad run your Twitter account. Since that's the only analogy I could come up with.
Pretty much nail on the head.
Yeah. Right. Okay, let's get into Ben, because otherwise we'll be here all morning talking about the news, and I can't keep boring you with that stuff. So let's go. First of all, Bitcoin at 7,437. Did you hear that?
That's not a 6.
Uh-huh.
Started with a 7.
Yeah. Bitcoin at one point yesterday was up 8%.
Wow.
And maybe on the way up, people are suddenly getting bullish. I see Run is suddenly tweeting again. And Ethereum is concurrently, but slightly behind the curve, starting to increase as well. $504 for Ethereum as we speak. Let's get to Ben. What do you got for us, Ben?
Well, the bulls are in a bit of bother, Gareth. One of their ex-props is suing for $45 million. Usain Bolt is taking his football dream to Australia, and Kevin Anderson up to number 5 in the world.
Oh, very good. Let's go. Let's see what else there is.
If you're part of the Bulls business, management, whatever it is, you do not want to be reading this story right now. So injured Bulls prop Morne Mellet is suing for 45 million rand.
What?
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money that no SA rugby team has right now.
Jesus.
Sorry, but you don't. You can try bluff me otherwise, but you don't. Now, Morne Mellet was playing against the Kings in 2015. He suffered a blow to the neck. Doctor came on the field and said, yeah, you're lekker, Morne, just keep playing. But after the match, he had a stroke. And couldn't feel his limbs, whatever, has not played since. 2015, he had a stroke after the match. So what happened was that he got some bleeding on the brain. And it was a kind of injury on the neck that it ruptured the vertebral vein responsible for supplying blood to the brain. He now got blood on the brain, and let's say he couldn't play rugby again.
Yep.
But if he was pulled off, maybe this wouldn't have happened. So just think, you've just ruptured the vertebral vein, and now you go and scrum again. So this dude, as he said, he couldn't play rugby, so that was his career gone. But now he's walking around knowing he can probably die at any stage because, these things can suddenly just turn out of nowhere. So he has a blood clot in his head, and it could move to his brain at any time. If it does move to his brain, that's all over.
That is horrendous.
So we kind of correct that medical analogy of mine. So yeah, he's got a blood clot in his head, he can't play rugby, and he's asking the Bulls for 45 million rand. And his lawyer obviously is asking for him on his behalf. Jan Lambrecht, he's going guns blazing with us, and the Bulls are going to contest the case. But still, I mean, how difficult is that? you know, obviously rugby's come along leaps and bounds. You know, the concussion testing nowadays, it's not about just calling a guy a morphy and telling him to play harder, like back in the 60s and 70s when he had an injury.
Man, people actually used to do that.
Yeah, that was pretty much the role of the trainer, was to basically slap you in the face, squeeze an orange in your eye, and then you'd play on. So rugby's come along a long way. But, I mean, look at the pressure situation here, because now this medical trainer and the team is being sued for this amount of money. But imagine you go on there, and the guy's not looking so lekker, but he doesn't want to come off the field, because that's the nature of a rugby player. But now you think, like, should I pull him off? I don't know, like, is he going to be pissed off? Does he want to play? Let's let him play. Let him play, have a stroke. Imagine that. And after the game, he had an actual stroke, couldn't feel anything.
Well, there's all this controversy in America, and it's ongoing, about American football players and the kinds of injuries and what do they call it? There's a word. I'm sure
Will Smith had a whole movie about it.
Yeah, if there's a doctor who's listening to us now, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But there's like head injury stuff that happens, and it actually, I listened to a whole Malcolm Gladwell podcast about this not so long ago.
It's hectic. It really is hectic. Usain Bolt is now going to Australia with his football dream. Now, people say that this is just one big PR stunt after another, but it's also just sport and marketing, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
So he's gone to Borussia Dortmund, he's been to Strømsgodset in Norway, he's been around, he's done testing with a variety of teams, but now the Mariners, the Central Coast Mariners are giving him a shot, so he's going to go there for 6 weeks essentially. And if it goes well, then he'll be signed up for the team. Now, the Mariners are looking to guarantee 70% of his salary, where Football Federation of Australia will pick up the rest. Because actually, if he goes there, now we spoke about the whole Ronaldo move to Italy in the Serie A. It's not just about Juventus, it's about the entire league, it's about their country, it's the whole deal. So the Football Federation of Australia, I mean, I don't think this is the biggest football federation in the world. If Usain Bolt suddenly starts playing for a team like the Central Coast Mariners, people might go to the stadium.
Yeah.
Therefore, people might buy kits, people might watch games, people might...
This is your Ronaldo argument.
Buy the hot dogs,
again.
Yeah. So this could be a big move in a marketing sense. Usain Bolt's not going to suddenly become the Ballon d'Or of Australia, whatever they want to call it. But it's a point of getting bums on seats. That's what the world's about. You know, we want ears on podcasts. These guys want bums on seats. Yeah. Simple as that. So Usain Bolt could do that. I mean, I would love to watch Usain Bolt play football.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm not going to fly to Australia for it, but you get my point. So he's going to go there, and if it goes well, then he'll be signed up for this team. And I think if it doesn't go well here, then he might just shelve this plan. I mean, he's had a bit of a jaw with it. He's made some friends, but yeah, the Australian Football Association, Football Federation of Australia, Central Coast Mariners. These are all key words if you want to pick up this conversation, which might not last very long. IS Cape Town, another football story. Well, it's just going from bad to worse. Now, when we all found out that this whole IS Cape Town were kind of docked points for having an ineligible player, therefore they were relegated, and then it was like, well, actually, no, a better judge says that they're not and they should be reinstated. What's going to happen here? Nothing. Because it's the PSL. Ivan Korza does not care. He's actually come out and told the player that he's in the wrong. FIFA are throwing their toys around. Well, who actually gives a toss? Because only the PSL. Like, if this was La Liga or the Premier League, this would have been sorted out in a day. And then, yeah, people are just now reappealing and kind of just trying to find a bigger judge. So the justice system is being kind of laughed at here. IS Cape Town, of course, will then just try to fight this to the death. But TikTok, I think it's 3rd of August, this new season starts. This isn't going to be resolved on 3rd of August. No. This isn't going to be resolved any time at all. So again, well done, or good luck to sponsors of local football in South Africa. You literally are probably throwing money down a toilet, and I wish you all the best in that. Hope the sound of the flush is at least pleasing, because it's just it's a mess. FC Barcelona, on the other hand, well, they've reported record revenues. Yeah. So obviously when you sell Neymar for the price of the PSL, over 10 years to oil money, then yeah, you will get record revenues. So 914 million euros. And they believe they will get to a billion by 2021.
Wow.
Neymar, of course, was sold for 200 million pounds. What do you reckon the profit is, though? Just think of net profit for a team. What do you reckon?
They must be making more than they're spending, otherwise they're not going to be in business.
Sure, they make a profit, but what do you reckon this all boils down to?
I don't know.
Made 914 million in revenue. What do you reckon the actual take away everything that's roll around?
400 million, and you'd think it was a massive success.
13 million.
Really?
I run a net profit.
Jeez, the margins are tight.
Operating profits of the club, 32 million, but your net profit will be 13 million euros for all that money.
Wow.
But it's the whole thing about you create so much employment, you create such a massive spectacle.
Okay.
But did you know that the English league just far surpasses La Liga? Everyone talks about Real Madrid, talking about Barcelona, talking about the big signings. The Premier League is 86% larger than La Liga.
Hmm.
It's quite steady, huh?
That is something. That's still where the money is.
86%, yeah. I mean, Man United is still the most valuable team in all of football. I know everyone says you haven't made it as a player until you've played La Liga. Well, yeah, sure. Okay, go play for Real Madrid, get a nice haircut and a tan. But the Premier League is still the biggest thing. So you can see why people start to migrate to it. And although these teams obviously don't have the sort of crazy buying power that the other teams have, maybe because they have public listings and there's other obligations financially, or whatever it is. But the big managers go there, that's the sign of things as a much bigger league. So 86% larger. It's because everyone in England watches football. Spain, there might be, I don't know, they might have second wives, or they might go boating, or there's different interests, if I say that. Kevin Anderson, yeah, up to number 5 in the world. It's just huge. It's massive. South Africans haven't been excited about tennis since, like, Amanda Kutzer used to have some slugfest from the baseline, or Wayne Ferreira used to wear a hat and ignore everybody. Kevin Anderson's the real deal. Number 5 in the world. That is absolutely massive. Yeah,
it's a pretty big deal.
So bloody excited for this guy. And JP Peterson might be back for the box in the Rugby Championship. Sabuan Kwazi, of course, is injured his ankle, out for 8 to 12 weeks. So they could be bringing Peterson back, which could be a really good thing as well. Going to the Rugby Championship, of course, is the toughest test because you play the All Blacks. And a little bit of experience in their back three wouldn't be the worst thing. Obviously, it's a dynamic trio that's done very well so far for the box under Rossy Erasmus. But an extra bit of experience. And, of course, when these players do come back from overseas, they generally are pretty good. So I have no problem with that. And lastly, there's that Cricket South Africa bringing that T20 league back. This time they're going to do it for reals.
Are you excited?
Let's find some time next week to talk about Cricket South Africa. There's some rumblings and some murmurings and some things that we might need to get a bit of a discussion around. But that is all for your sport for this Tuesday. Is Tuesday? Wednesday?
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Tomorrow we are hitting golf so hard.
All right, let's go, Sia. What you got?
Well, there's no way of escaping talking about Mandela Day and giving of your 67 minutes on a day like this. And, you know, I just want to spend this morning highlighting a website that I've discovered and that I think whatever or regardless of where you're on, whatever you feel like doing today, this is the website to go to that would really help you. It is called forgood.co.za. It's literally that, forgood.co.za. Mm-hmm. And it is an online database to explore how you can volunteer and give of your time, of your money, and to donate wherever you are within South Africa. So visit forgood.co.za and it breaks down how you can assist someone or people in need. You can decide and click on to whether you want to volunteer time or you want to donate goods and where in the country you are, and it will bring up results as to where you want to assist in the country. So in keeping with 67 Minutes and Mandela Day today, they've created specifically 9 different campaigns for the 9 provinces in and around South Africa, and listing 100 people in need or 100 opportunities of people you can help out within the province you are. So I think it's really so simple. It's amazing. There's no excuse as to why you can't help out. And I think when it comes to helping out, I know on a day like this, some people may just be so ready to roll their eyes on, oh, here we go again. But this is what changed my mind. I was in grade 10 when I read this book, second mention of this guy on the show this morning, Bill Clinton. He wrote a book called Giving.
Yeah.
The subtitle is How Each of Us Can Change the World. And he really, in the book, explains how whether you're giving of your time, whether you're giving of your own money, or just giving of your own expertise or knowledge, as long as you are giving in the world, I think those are the little things that matter. Because whatever you believe, and I sound very preachy this morning, excuse me for that, but whatever you believe, whatever you've experienced, I think what we all know for sure is that we're all in this world, old, we're trying to figure life out, and if you're at any sort of point where you feel like you can help someone in need figure this thing called life out or make their journey a little easier, then why not do that? And that's the essence of community service and extending yourself and helping someone else. So that excites me about just giving in general.
What are you doing for Mandela Day?
A day like this, and
that everybody
in particular,
wants to know.
I'll be bouncing around from place to place. I've spoken to a bunch of my different friends and getting involved in what they'll be up to. But specifically, I'll also be at Headway, and we'll be chatting to them at 7:30 because they're giving back to people who really work in our services department, so the paramedics and firefighters, etc., etc. So, yeah, spending most of my day there, but I'll be bouncing around and using a site like forgood.ca.za to see what's near me and in my area, and I can volunteer there. So, that's your preachy, but I think worthwhile Said by Sia for this morning.
Fantastic. All right, Said by Sia and Ben Sport and some news headlines. We're on fire today. It's busy. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the other things that have been going on. I saw the French got a little bit violent after their Football World Cup win.
Oh, yeah, with the burning things up. And
we don't have to get into too much detail there, but that happened.
They were not displaying panache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's football, guys. It's football.
And Thomas Markle is back on the scene.
Yes.
Plus, I've got a hilarious email that someone sent to SARS, which I think you'll find very funny, too. You know, a lot of people have some funny things to say to SARS. And a lot of people are pissed off with the whole situation in South Africa. We spoke about tax just the other day and went through how exactly it works. That it's not sustainable the way that it's moving at the moment. And the government, obviously, are desperately hungry for tax. And someone wrote a very sarcastic and very funny email, which I'll read to you in just a little while. CliffCentral.com. We're heading up towards 7 o'clock.
This is CliffCentral.com.